This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back. We're now going to be chatting to a really interesting gentleman, Prince Adu Apia. Have I said that correctly?
Yes, it's actually Adu Apia.
Adu Apia. Founder of 1 Billion Africa. So, you were here for the Bright Young Minds Conference. What is that? Share with us.
Okay, first of all, I want to say that thanks for having me. It's really great to be in this environment. Well, I was here in South Africa for the Brightest Young Mind Summit.
Okay. So this. Where are you from? Just sorry for our listeners' benefit.
Okay, so I'm from Ghana, from West Ghana, Africa.
From West Africa, yep. Ghana.
Yep. So back to Brightest Young Mind Summit. This is a summit that has been running for the past 16 years. And what they do is that every year they gather, select young people from across Africa, so the brightest young minds across Africa, and they gather at one particular place. So this time we were in Sandton, and they engage us through a number of activities. You know, we get to share knowledge together as bright young people in Africa, and we get to interact with great personalities on the continent as well.
Okay, so it's about networking and sharing and
exactly.
and creating opportunities
exactly.
across the continent. Now, what exactly is 1 Billion Africa? That's your part of the world. What are you doing there?
Well, so 1 Billion Africa, I choose to say it's a movement, a problem-solving movement that empowers young people in communities to find problems in those communities and to turn them into projects. So basically, what we are saying is that Africa has so many problems, like 1 billion problems, right? Mm. And so
For each African, right?
Exactly. You know,
1 billion problems for each billion Africans.
Yes, you know, that was the aha moment. I mean, I thought it made sense. I'm very passionate about Africa, and I think why we have so many problems. But we also have so many people, potentials, who can turn these problems into projects. So it made so much sense for us. So what we do is basically we select communities. For example, in Ghana, when we go to the communities, we we've decided to select young people, the youth. So we gather them and we engage with them. Guys, what can you turn into a project in this community at your level?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so where did the idea come from? I mean, creating projects, trying to solve the problem. I mean, where did you come up with this concept?
Well, let me trace it way back. When I was a child, I used to be the introvert type. So I would hide in my corner and I would just be imagining, you know, the problems in my community, different communities in Ghana, in Accra, and then I would think solutions. I'll just imagine solutions. But when I come back from this imagination trip, I'll just be so disappointed because the reality is totally different. And so I recall when I was 17 years old, I began thinking deeply about Africa. My God, why do we have so many resources, so much resources? Ghana alone has timber, we have gold, we have coke, we have everything, we have oil. But what does our economic status say? And so I began thinking deeply about all these problems. And usually, again, like what I did when I was a child, I mean, 17 years old, I'll just lock myself up and be thinking about Africa. What can I do, at least at my level? And usually I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I've not done this twice, once or twice, a number of times. I'd even be sharing tears that, why I feel so helpless. So it was this kind of passion that kept gathering to a point when at a typical passion state where I was just thinking about Africa, a question just popped up in my head. Prince, how many problems are there in Africa? Mm. And so I was like, plenty, like 1 billion problems, right? And then I remembered, oh my God, we have 1 billion people on the in Africa as well. What if everyone was tackling one problem? And so it just made sense. And so we were like, okay, so let's target young people. Let's try to make them have that sense of responsibility in their communities. At least with that, we can get to make Africa a better place.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Prince, I mean, one of the biggest challenges that we face as a continent in regards to youth is youth unemployment. Are you in any way, you know, through your projects and your initiative, you know, looking to tackle that problem? If so, how?
Yes. So what we are doing is, when we say we are from 1 billion Africa, we are not saying we are solving the 1 billion problems. We want that mindset to be in the minds of young people, mm-hmm. that do something, at least in your community.
Be the solution.
Be the solution. Okay. That is our message that we are preaching. But you see, we like to also be the example. Mm-hmm. So when we go to a community and we preach this message, guys, what can you and you and you do in your community? We try to also turn a problem we have found in that community into a project. Okay, and so let me, and so we run some educational projects and so on and so forth. So let me come back to your question of unemployment. We have some projects that are tackling unemployment. Of course, we cannot get everyone in Ghana employed or everyone in Africa employed, but at least we start small. And so let me just give an example. For example, there is this program we are running in an orphanage in Ghana. We realize that when orphans turn 18, they are supposed to leave their homes. But usually they leave with no skills. And so we decided to provide ICT training to a certain age bracket in that orphanage so that when they leave with certain skills. And we've had bright young orphans that are doing amazing, you know, some coding, some having that skill, you know,
development, those sort of things.
Exactly. Okay. So we are not solving everything, but at least
that's amazing.
Yep,
that's fantastic. Mm.
Now, I mean, at the end of the day, somebody's got to pay for all of this and all of this activity. How do you go about generating revenue and funding for these sort of activities? What's your experience out there? I mean, everybody wants to pay a rand for every problem solved, and you've collected yourself a billion rand and you've solved a lot of problems, I would assume.
Yeah. I mean, I get to get that question quite a lot of times. You know, when we started, we actually started as an NPO, straight ahead. So mm-hmm. pure civil society organization, just doing advocacy and running our projects. But then we realized that, guys, we can't survive going this way. And so we had to develop a financial model, what we call 1 billion Africa support services. And so we actually have some 5 things that we do, you know, that generate at least some income into the running of the organization. So we provide project consulting. We get to get a number of people who have ideas. They don't really know where to start. Since we have some experience in there, we try to provide some consulting. And as well, I heard one of your speakers talk about branding. We also provide project branding. Of course, if you are running a project in your community, you want it to look good in the eyes of your stakeholders, right? Yeah. And so we try to provide some project branding over there. And one other thing that is out of the box that we are doing is we provide data collection solutions to organizations that are interested in, development projects in communities. So we sort of develop tools, apps that they use to collect data. You know,
okay.
And in Ghana,
Now I can tell you that that's a critical element, particularly in Western Central Africa, because the reality is that the data, let's call it the database capabilities in those environments, is actually pretty poor from what I've seen. I was up in Cameroon last week.
Okay.
And one of the things that always comes to the fore is that how in developed economies and markets, we have things like credit bureaus, business indices, etc. I mean, I was told that the way that they were doing some inflation measurement was they actually had the basket, literally the basket of goods that needed, and they would send somebody out to the local market every few weeks to buy the basket and cost it. And I know you kind of, Ellis and I are looking at each other going, right. but the reality is they were trying to get inflation measures across a wide community in the country.
Yeah.
And hey, it works. Yeah. And I know it sounds very not, you know, the economics major right now is turning over going, oh my goodness, I can't believe you actually do that. But the reality is data from the ground is often so much more relevant particularly in the context where
and more reliable. I mean, that's the key thing, the reliability of this data, and actually who also supplies it.
So I think you're doing something really interesting there as a service, and I can think of a few corporates that would definitely be looking to use your services.
Thank you.
Question for Prince from me. So, okay, 1 billion Africans. How do you then make this a Pan-Africa initiative? Is it a Pan-Africa initiative or is it a Ghanaian initiative?
It is a sole Pan-African initiative. Like I said, I'm really passionate about Africa, seriously. And that is why it's not 1 billion Ghana, right? Or 1 billion Ghana. Yeah, it's 1 billion Africa, but you have to start from somewhere. I recall that, when we started, I got to pitch this idea at a global youth forum in Russia, and I got all Africans over there wanting to be a part of it. Those in Libya, Egypt, Morocco, everyone. And so we were like, okay, we can do everything at once like that, right? And so we currently have country ambassadors in 9 other African countries who are sort of at this time they do our meetups for us if we have a partner in their countries.
So these are like chapters. Chapters.
Yes, chapters. Okay. But the plan is that once the project is running in a very solid state in Ghana, Africa, yes, our challenges and our problems are not the same, but they are similar. So we try to model what we're doing in Ghana in the other African countries and try to replicate the impact.
Okay. So here in South Africa, we have a chapter?
Yes, we have country ambassadors. One came here right with me, and another lives in Sandton.
Okay, great stuff.
Okay. Now, I mean, at the end of the day, the projects that you're doing and what you're focusing on, give us some examples of some of the projects that you've seen take off. I mean, idea generation, great. What is the kind of give us some a little further down the path? What have you seen transpire from some of these projects? Give us some examples, workable examples that you've seen.
Okay, so let me give this. It's an educational project called Go Empower Schools Project. And so the problem that was identified is that in some of these deprived communities, so for example, a deprived community, let me give a typical example. The community is called Ajimenti. It's in the eastern part of Ghana, and the problem identified was that a school had a facility, but they lacked certain key educational materials. So then,
That's a lot of schools like that here, Prince. So it's not a unique situation.
so that is an example, but that was not only the problem, right? The other problem was that were parents given the right attention that their children needed? Did they have good teachers, passionate enough teachers? And so when the project rolled, I mean, it's called Go and Pass Good Project, but when it rolled, I recall that there was a dialogue that was organized. So community leaders, including the chief of that community, was there. Community leaders, parents, and then teachers, management of the school to engage in a conversation to try to see how best together they can promote quality education in that deprived school, whilst educational materials, learning materials, were also channeled to that particular school.
Okay. So, I was going to say, I think the reality of, education in Africa is just so, so key.
It is a billion problem in its own
in and of itself
situation.
It's a challenge. And what I'm always fascinated by is how some countries have got it right and some have just not got it there. I mean, I once again, visiting Cameroon last week, I was astounded at, just what I saw in terms of capability in the people, and I tell you, if you want to trade items, you want to figure out how the open market really works, go to Cameroon, go to Douala for a lesson in how to trade anything from wood to truck tires to, if it moves, they'll trade it for you. An incredible environment. But at the same time, they have an education system that's fallen apart, and they rely on private education basically to educate some of the most of the kids. And you look at this and you go, but you've got such capability. It's such a stark contrast of highly capable Cameroonians and a failing school system. So education is clearly, and always I think will be, an African imperative that one needs to focus on. Yeah. Give us some examples of some of the other projects that you've got.
Yes, so I give this example of the orphanage training. That's another example. We had gone there to do the advocacy. So
who funds that project?
Yes, so...
Well, okay, yes, so that's a hint to all the funders out there looking for an opportunity to spend.
I'm trying to bring Adam into this conversation.
You see, it's kind of difficult, especially when we started or 2 years down the line. It was kind of really difficult because trying to get that attention, you know, if you lacking that networking, you know. So what we decided to do was to really leverage on partnerships.
Okay.
So if it's educational project and we're looking for money to go and buy resources, we go to those that provide the resources, say, guys, this is what we are doing. Are you able to help? So we have leveraged on partnerships a lot. And so and I as well mentioned the financial model we had to develop to help generate at least some funds. But in Ghana, the reality is that getting the huge sums of grant, you know, to run projects like this is really difficult.
From big corporates?
From big corporates. Okay.
Yeah, here we have CSI projects, you know, which is, you know, these programs that sit within corporate with huge sums of money. And again, I would say it's difficult even here to access that funding. So maybe, you know, Adam, what would your sense be in terms of how someone, you know, like 1 Billion Africa can, you know, strengthen those ties with people who can find some of the good work they're doing? What would they have to do?
If you look at where the decision to fund comes from, it's usually from the individuals within an organization, mm-hmm. not from the organization itself. And your best success will be to connect with individuals who have influence in the organization. So rather than connect with the organization cold and phone them up and say, listen, you're kind of in the education environment and so are we, and do you want to? Mm. Grab some of the individuals who are responsible for that CSI purse and bring them along to your event. Develop a relationship with them first. And then over time, you'll be one of the organizations they want to spend money with. I had a conversation with a venture capitalist not too long ago, and he said the time to engage with a venture capitalist is not the time when you need the money. Mm. It's long before. So develop the conversations with the right people long before you plan to approach them for money. The chances are they'll see your success and they'll want to be involved because of the work that you're doing and the fact that they can see that it relates to their CSO objectives.
Mm. This, my sound on, sorry, I'm back in. I'm not going to take over, but the CEO of General Electric, he was saying...
Thomas Conditi.
Conditi, he was saying your network, you build your network in the now.
Mm.
You know, it's not about handing out cards and things. It's about creating a network now. Every day you meet people, the way you engage them, the way you keep in contact. So part of your life should be connecting today and building that network now for when I may need it in the future. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's one of the reasons behind the Bright Young Minds conference would be building those networks and creating the capability and capacity. Yeah. I think, you know, that's what people must always remember. And I mean, let's pull some learnings from this. People do business with people. They don't do business with brands. They don't do business with products. They do business with people. And the reality is those relationships that you have allow you to then move kind of through the business world and solve some of the challenges. And it's amazing how, you know, what is a huge challenge to one group of people is actually perhaps such a simple solution set to somebody else. But you've got to find the people that have got the resources, the ability, and the will to solve the problem. I mean, I've worked with people where, you know, I'll get statements like, oh, there's no appetite for funding growth in Africa. Or the, you know, the US, UK...
Brexit will be now an excuse, right?
Well...
We can't find this because Brexit has happened.
Yeah. You know, and then you have a conversation with them and it's all just not going to happen kind of mindset. And then, you know, a few days later, you're talking to somebody else about the situation And they're going, oh, no, that's a great business opportunity. Yeah, no, we must put money into that. I'm going, yeah, but the guys over there are telling you that, like, run for the hills, and you're saying you want to put cash into this. And the strange thing is, both this group of people, both were move in the worlds of asset management, investment management, the likes. Yet one's got a positive outlook on an environment, and the other's got such a negative outlook. Yeah. And it just always amazes me how people's outlooks, rather than, you know, what forms the official view on something? Nothing more than opinion and people's opinions.
And it's people.
Yeah. So having those networks and having people experience things, the realities, is far more powerful than just, you know, reading about it or watching it on CNN or whatever it may be.
So, yeah. Prince, what's next for 1 Billion Africa? I mean, obviously you've had this big gathering, you meet every year, right?
Yeah.
What comes out of there? What are some of the outcomes that come out of that gathering?
You mean the Brightest Young Mind Summit?
Yes, Brightest Young Mind Summit.
Oh, it's different set of 100 young people every year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm coming here for the first time.
Okay.
But it was really brilliant because in the end, we were divided into groups and we were challenged to come up with solutions to what we are passionate about. I'm very passionate about education. So I connected with 10 other young South Africans and other Africans who are passionate about education. We brainstormed for 36 good hours and we came up with a brilliant solution that turned second.
Oh, and, wow.
Yes, very innovative. And we had a representative from Barclays, South Africa, wanting to mentor the event and all that, and a whole lot of things. So a number of great stuff come up from events like this. I have really been challenged like never before.
So there is a pipeline of ideas that can even be funded?
Exactly.
Next week, we've got the people who run this, the CEO of Bright Young Minds on. That's the plan, and then two or three of your peers who will come to the studio, and here we have one already with a bit of a insight into it.
Yeah,
I was going to say, for me, the reality is of any idea generation and solution generation environment like that is, guys, great, but let's not have a talk shop. We've got to make sure that we've got funding behind it, and the ideas are fundable, and there's funding available to make it happen. And that's always an interesting challenge to get that right.
Yeah.
No, totally. And the thing is, Africa has a lot of these platforms now where, you know, you get ideas and, you know, good flow of ingenuity and innovation. Yet you find that those ideas then leave this part of the world. Am I right, Prince? You find that then we'll have to re-import the idea as a solution because there was just no traction to make it happen here.
Yes, that is really sometimes the fear, right? You get young people come to an environment like this, they get themselves charged up, they are so much filled with ideas, but then some go back to school, they go to Europe, and, you know, it's sort of like everything deflates, right? So I think it really depends on the individuals that are being selected. If you are really passionate about it, and not just passionate about the topic, but in relation to Africa, the African context, I believe you will always come back to the continent to make your mark.
Okay. Can I just ask a general question, and then I guess you'll round it up. But, Prince, you see the best and the worst of Africa, I would guess.
You know, yes, I do.
The real poverty, the real problems, but you also see people who are part of the solution trying to find it. So you do see both sides. Yes. You could fall this way or that way in terms of your attitude about the continent. How do you feel about Africa?
That's a deep question, let me say. But I feel hopeful, actually. I feel really hopeful. I engaged in a conversation with my peers a few days ago. And I was telling them that, guys, you know why I believe that Africa will get to that status we are all dreaming to see? And they were like, tell us. And I told them that, look, we want Africa to be united, right? To do a lot of great things together. Now, pick my president from Ghana, President Mahama. Pick president of Nigeria, Buhari. If you tell them to connect right now, they have not been doing that since they were young. But we are, guys, we are doing that now. We are networking now. We are growing now. In the next 20 years, in the next 30 years, we are probably going to join together resources to help promote or push forward this continent. So that relationship, it's really growing. And it's I don't know if you get a perspective from which I'm
Prince for President, is that what you're telling me?
No way. No, it's just an example. Okay, no, maybe
I get your point.
The word I should have used is leader, right?
Yeah,
the leader. Yes, so I really believe it, because, and one other thing I told them was that, look, I don't believe this conversation we are having in this room about Africa rising could have happened 40 years ago. Mm. No. So it shows, it sort of predicts the future. If we are having that conversation now, it sort of predicts a very bright future. I believe it's going to be take a long time, but maybe not immediately, but definitely.
How old are you, Prince? Someone listening to the conversation want to know.
Well, I'm 26 years old.
Okay, so
that's
young,
wonderful. So you would be African. Interested. You would be interested in our youth leadership platform that we kick off today at 2:30 to 3:00.
Mm-hmm.
All about youth issues, and it will rise into Africa, no doubt. So we're out of time because we have a great feature coming up. I don't know if you want to say something finally, Richard. We've got to close.
No, I think.
How do people get hold of Prince?
Yes, so you can visit our website. You can just Google 1 billion Africa. That is number one, not O-N-E. 1billionafrica.org. You can find us over there. Twitter, Facebook. Mm-hmm. Just that key word, 1 billion.
1 billion Africa.
I think it would be good to engage Prince if ever he comes back to South Africa. Just on his perspective about African leadership as a young person.
Yeah, Edward. And we could even put him on Skype. All the way from up there in our youth leadership platform show. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
It's been great having you all here. Really wonderful. I missed part of the conversation, but I'm excited about the next one coming up. And that was Richard Angus, Adam Rabinowitz, of course, from Imagine 8, and Alison Nyandu. Prince, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's been great having you here. Next up, we have our first ever feature. It's part of the Transformation Platform, a technology transformation feature with Cell C. So they're starting to partner with us on this. And the whole half hour is starting to, you know, engaging technology and what impact does this have on leaders? I think that is the main culprit that is causing all this change. So stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.